Australia's chief scientist, Alan Finkel, has joined a chorus of critics warning that Australia's university admission system is failing our students. The Australian Tertiary Admission Rank, otherwise known as ATAR, scales the marks of Year 12 students and gives them a ranking that determines which courses they'll be admitted to. The formula is complicated, and in a report released this week, Alan Finkel says it's leading students to try and game the system by taking less challenging math subjects, for instance. However, defenders of the system say ATAR remains an efficient way to decide which students should get a university offer. Andrew Norton is director of the Higher Education Program at the Grattan Institute. Tim Pittman is senior research fellow at Curtin University School of Education. Tim Pittman, hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Andrew Norton is on his way. I think we had him, we've just lost him. So, Tim, I'll start with you. You're not so certain that the ATAR system as it works now is fit for purpose. Why is that? Because when it was first brought in 2009, Australian university student places were uncapped, and the number of students now it is uncapped, the number of students receiving funding has increased by something like close to 200,000 students. Do we need an ATAR now?
So you're right that the ATAR came in the mid-2000s, but it's in another name, in other forms, it dates back to the 70s. And that's the real issue here. The ATAR was designed for a higher education system vastly different to the one we have now. It was great that what you led with the fact of how it works. It is a rank. It's not a score. It's not a score of academic ability, let alone academic potential. The ATAR works best in a situation where demand massively exceeds supply. The ATAR was designed for a higher education system where the number of qualified applicants vastly outnumbered the number of places available. And an ATAR is designed not to include or assess students, it's designed to exclude them. And in that respect, it works very, very well. When you have more students than you have places and all those students are ably qualified, the ATAR is the best way of demonstrably and fairly ranking those students and deciding which ones don't get to go to university.
Okay.
Fast forward to 2018, we've got almost a million students in the system, a demand-driven system, and the game has drastically changed. What we need is we need a system which doesn't rank students on the ability of best to worst, but ranks students on their academic potential to succeed in the course.
Okay.
And ATAR doesn't do that so well.
All right. I think Andrew Norton from the Grattan Institute is back with us. Andrew, hello there.
Good morning.
So you heard, I think, most of Tim Pittman's argument there that the ATAR is a system. It's a score, it's a ranking, not a score, and that it depends upon a system where we've got fewer places than we have students, and that is not the case now. Do you agree with that?
Look, I think it's mostly used by unis at the top end, you know, the high ATAR, high in demand scores. At the lower end, they tend to use other selection methods, but I think it's still true that students use these numbers. So people who've got low ATARs tend not to apply and tend to drop out fairly soon. So the students are using this information, even though the unis may not.
Tim, what do you say to that? That the students are using it as it should be, in a sense. They're self-selecting.
I wouldn't say they're self-selecting on the basis of ATAR. I think they're self-selecting on a wider range of decisions, life circumstances, educational environment, and that's reflected in their ATAR score. So I don't think you're looking at a student at the very last moment saying, oh, I got that ATAR, I'm not going to university.
Well, isn't it obvious if you've got an ATAR of 50, you're not going to get into a law course, are you? So you self-select in that sense.
That's correct, and that's when we've got to split the ATAR from the particular course or university that we're talking about it. As Andrew said, at the higher end, when you're talking about ATARs above 18 above, the ATAR works relatively well. But at the lower end, it doesn't work so well. And again, Andrew's correct, a lot of students decide at that level not to go to university, and that's reflected in their ATAR. But nonetheless, you've still got a large number of students with low ATAR scores that can and do succeed at university.
I'll come back to that. But the chief scientist, Andrew, says the ATAR isn't working at all well. And that's because he says, in effect, kids are trying to game the system. They're trying to boost their ATAR, which is natural, human nature. You want to try and do all you can. And some of that includes doing easier subjects, easier maths, for instance. And he says kids are rocking up at university unfit to study sciences and engineering because they don't have the maths, and they're doing that because they are trying to get a better ATAR. Do you agree with that?
Look, I think some students, I think some students are doing that, but this really goes down to the prerequisite subjects you need for these courses. So I think students will always take the easiest, lowest risk route to whatever goal they've got. And for as long as universities don't have prerequisites around maths, for example, students will probably avoid doing the hardest maths if they don't enjoy maths.
Yeah, but as Ellen Finkel says, employers expect the education system to deliver students who are work capable, who are able to do this, and the ATAR is not doing that. It's getting them the marks, the ATAR, to get into a course, but it's not getting them with the skills and capacity they need. It's not
that
working
there. That may be true, but I think abolishing ATAR won't change that, because unis will still use some kind of school results, and if they're not requiring top-level maths, there'll be students just won't do it. And I think the core thing is not the ATAR, it is the fact that people don't like doing hard maths and they won't do it if they don't need it to get the course they want.
Tim, part of the criticism of the ATAR is this whole system is impossible to work out. It's very non-transparent. Would transparency in your ranking system help? And is there another system that beyond ATAR that could work better, do you think?
I don't agree that the ATAR is not transparent. I think that if you
Scaling is really impossible to figure out, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you release the methodology of the scaling, I think that only a less than 1% of people out there would understand it. And this is a situation. I used to sit in at scaling meetings when I was the admissions manager at university. And I would be taken through it every year, and it would be very, very challenging and very, very difficult to explain to a layperson, let alone a mathematician. This is the point where, again, you need to trust the experts who explain the scaling system and are basically there, if you will, as overlookers and auditors to say this is a fair system. In terms of replacing it, I don't think you want to replace the ATAR. You want to complement it. You want to acknowledge the courses and the students for which the ATAR does not work. And nowadays we're talking about literally thousands of students for which it does not work. So to leave the majority alone, it is a transparent and it is a fair system. But for those students in which it's not working, then use or complement it with another range of measures, not just around admission, but around how you actually support the student once they get into university.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 17 minutes to 9. Our guests are Andrew Norton, Director of the Higher Education Program at the Grattan Institute, and Tim Pittman, Senior Research Fellow at Curtin University School of Education. Andrew, another suggestion is that universities use the ATAR to signal what are the most attractive courses, and a high ATAR attracts students to a course rather than the course and career choice itself. I wonder what you think of that, because if that's true, it's more about demand, not about academic requirement then, isn't it?
So most ATARs are reflections of supply and demand. So basically students bid up the ATAR of the most popular courses, kind of like money. Others have minimum requirements. I don't think people actually do courses just for the ATAR. You know, all the research says that people do courses that interest them or they think will be interested in them. And so within your narrow range of interests, you might go for the highest ATAR course, but I don't think you're going to radically change your interest just for the ATAR.
But if the students are bidding up the ATAR, then what use is it? Because shouldn't an ATAR be about attracting those students who are capable, academically capable and suitable for a course?
Look, I think in all these courses with high ATARs, I think everyone who goes has got the underlying academic preparation, and all the ATAR is doing is trying to find some reasonably fair and efficient way of deciding who gets these limited places.
Tim Pittman, one thing you know that you often notice is some courses, like media is one, has a huge, very high ATAR requirement, and you wouldn't necessarily expect that is those students who are getting in the 97 pluses are necessarily the ones that are going to be the best journalists, for instance, would you?
No, I guess you've got a point there. Again, like Andrew said, most of the time this does work out. There's a very limited and very select number of courses where you have ridiculously high ATARs. There are one or two courses where in the past universities have not filled them deliberately not to go below a certain ATAR because they want to signal to the market that it's a prestigious course, that it's an elite course. Those are exceptions, not rules. But that is changing. That again refers, that was a practice that was more common in practice before we had a demand-driven system. Now we have a demand-driven system. Universities are slowly, in some cases grudgingly, shifting their attention away from just using the ATAR as a blunt instrument to acknowledging they're saying, well, we've got a number of places now. At what point are these students not academically capable?
Mm.
And as I say, the further down the ATAR you go, the less accurate it is as an assessment tool for a student's ability to complete the course.
Just finally, too, this notion that there's a lot of ways around the ATAR now. In fact, a review commissioned by the federal government in 2016 found only 31% of university students rely on their ATAR for entry to university. Can pay their way through. They can pay for what's called pathway courses. The University of Western Sydney even has a special college to help students with lower ATARs make the transition. If the fact that you can pay money to get into a course that ends up a pathway to uni, even if you've got a pretty dubious ATAR, doesn't that undermine the status and the usefulness of the ATAR as well, Andrew?
I don't think so, because if you successfully completed a diploma, you're actually relatively low risk of not completing. We've done some recent research on this. So I think the diploma weeds out the people who are never going to pass, and it adds some academic skills to people who didn't get a great ATAR. And so that actually is a good pathway. To me, the main issue with the low ATAR is not to stop them getting in. You know, most people with low ATARs do get an offer if they apply. The key thing is that if it's not working out, the student is discontinued relatively quickly, so they haven't spent a whole lot of time and money on something that's not going to lead to a degree.
Tim?
On that pathway, that's a really important point. There are both free and paid pathways. The free ones are called enabling programs, and they are fundamentally important for disadvantaged students to get into higher education. The prior research that I did a couple of years ago showed that students that went through those free enabling courses drastically improved their chances of success in higher education. Unfortunately, under the latest suite of measures by the government, they're looking now to charge students for those courses. Yes, they can cover that charge through HECS, but this is a time where we should be increasing the number of free enabling courses for disadvantaged students, not cutting them back.
Tim Pittman, Andrew Norton, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrew Norton, Director of the Higher Education Program at the Grattan Institute, and Tim Pittman, Senior Research Fellow at Curtin University School of Education.